Can you hear the music, Robert? Yes, I can.
You're listening to Phil at the Movies.
And welcome back, my fellow movie friends and friends of movies. I'm your host, Phil Walsh, and this is episode number 137 of this ongoing podcast, Phil at the Movies, the show that is always, you guessed it, for the love of movies. Whether you are listening to this on a podcasting app or watching it on YouTube, thank you from the bottom of my heart for tuning in each and every Friday and being a part of this philosophical cinematic journey with me. Yes, pun fully intended there. And also, if you would be so kind be so kind to rewind, as the old slogan says. But in all seriousness, if you could rate and review the podcast, give it a like, give it a subscribe on YouTube, really helps with growing the numbers and those pesky algorithms. And we're continuing to hit the marks on this show, and that's all because of you, the listeners and friends. So thank you for what you do, tuning in each and every Friday, sharing this, recommending the show. All of it helps with building up its recognition and awareness. And that, of course, is all thanks to you. And I say thank you to you. But on that note, let me begin first with just a rundown of what is going to be happening on the show today. As I teased last week, change was in the air for this particular show. And I'm a big believer in periodic renewal and sort of, you know, rejuvenation and reinvigoration of any old format. Can't keep the same ways going over and over. And as I said last week, going to be trying a new intro. There's a new logo for the show now. But in addition to the window dressing, if you will, going to be some interesting new formats. I think interesting new additions to the show. So actually, beginning today, this is going to be the first of what will be a monthly mailbag portion. I've been sort of taking questions on social media, even a few emails, and I have put together all your movie-related questions that you have asked me, and I will respond to them. So first, I want to say thank you to everyone who sent in some questions. But in addition, this is going to be a monthly a portion of the show. So I'll be sending out tweets and messages and whatnot, and I'll be making references on the show. So if you have a movie-related question and you want to hear me opine about it, this is your opportunity. Going to do that once a month. In addition to the regular movie review or discussion portion of the show, could also save for the end a special comment section, which could be me just sort of firing off about a movie-related story in the news or just something that is grinding my gears, as the old expression goes. A chance for me to give a movie-related rant. So again, that will be a weekly portion. It could just be as simple as me commentating or commenting on a news article vis-a-vis a upcoming movie or production note, what have you. But that's also going to be a new addition to the show. And in addition, last but certainly not least, there will be periodic live shows. And that is where I'm going to really be leaning into the YouTube portion because, again, not going to do it all the time, but figured, you know, maybe once a month or once every other month, have a live show, chance for us to gather and just talk movies. Maybe, you know, could be on a a major event like the upcoming release of Gladiator 2 and Wicked, which is already spawning memories of a Barbenheimer from 2023, Wickinator. I'll let other people come up with a catchy slogan, but again, two films coming out later this month, almost right on top of each other, and going to be, you know, certainly an interesting double feature, perhaps, because these are not two films that would necessarily mix well together. But again, maybe in the same vein as Barbie and Oppenheimer from last year. Who knows? Who knows? To be determined. But again, that's going to be the type of setting for a live show. Just again, a chance, you know, for 45 minutes, an hour to sort of have a back and forth with you, the listeners, you, the friends, in real time. So that will be another addition to the show to look forward to. And I, of course, will send out notifications and reminders and let you know when the first live show is happening. But again, that's just some changes going on here with it. And of course, it's always for the love of movies. Now today, for the main event, I want to talk to you about perhaps, I feel like I say this a lot, and you'll probably think, okay, you're leaning into hyperbole, Phil. And I'm guilty. I'm guilty of sometimes, you know, overreading the moment, but I don't think so on this particular film. The movie is The Substance, and it stars Demi Moore, and I am not understating it when I say this to you. It is one of the most provocative films of the year, and it is already one of my favorite films of the year, in addition to, I believe, one of the best films of the year as well. So we got sort of a triple feature right there. It's provocative. It's already one of my favorites. And I do think it is one of the best made films of the year. As I said, it stars Demi Moore as Elizabeth Sparkle. And she is an aerobics show host. She has a lot of recognition and star power, but her life is turned upside down when she is fired from the show on account of her advancing age. And Dennis Quaid plays Harvey, this sort of slick, almost cartoonish, 80s-centric villain who is the network head and is responsible for Elizabeth's firing. And, of course, this changes her life. Everything is turned upside down, and she sort of sinks into despair and despondency. But she then discovers, through an advertisement, a mysterious, rejuvenative cure, perhaps, The Substance, as it is called, which promises to transform her into an enhanced version of herself. Now, this is not a comedy, though there are satirical elements in it. This is a full-on horror film, and it's not just a sort of a psychological horror or sort of a slasher horror. This is a body horror film. So if you're a fan of David Cronenberg, think of films like The Fly, for example, this movie is going to be right up your alley. And the result here in this film, not only does it have one of Demi Moore's best performances to date, it's an all-engrossing, transformative film, and she just leaves you speechless from start to finish. But the film results in this grotesque and beautifully disarming horror film that, I mean, like I said, by the end of it, you are going to be left your mouth agape, speechless, absolutely speechless by the end of the film. And it's not only the sort of the shock and awe of what happens and the horrifying images and the grotesque and stomach churning moments that happen. Those are there, but it's really the weight of the performances. As I said, Demi Moore gives her strongest performance, I think, to date. And it's resulting in this portrait of of a woman who is very much sort of ingrained in our own reality. And I think that is what makes it so frightening and true at the same time, because this movie, while it is over the top in a way, it is speaking to larger themes and ideas that we see in our own world day to day. The film itself, it is a commentary on the double standards facing women in all industries, but particularly in the area of TV and film, where aging is very much front and center. And while the film takes on, as I said, sort of a stylized approach to the aesthetic, the real meat of this film, the message, really hits home. It is a film that sort of shines the spotlight on the way in which women are treated in the media, in the spotlight, in the public eye, and sort of that you know, quest to always, you know, look your best and be your best. And even when that's not good enough, there's always sort of this desire to find, you know, the next best thing, you know, the next it girl, if you will. And that's very much at the center and heart of this film. Putting all that together, the boldness and the introspection of it just leaves you shocked and both saddened at the same time. It's a movie that works on many different levels. And I find that to be, you know, imminently fascinating. In addition, of course, to Demi Moore, who is phenomenal, the film also stars Megan Qualley, who plays the character Sue. Now, Sue is a creation, if you will, or the result of Elizabeth taking the substance. And this creation that is Sue is a nightmarish concoction that ultimately is produced as a younger, more appealing version of Elizabeth, who, ironically enough, ends up becoming the next it girl, if you will, the next aerobics star and host, the same position that Elizabeth was fired from at the beginning of the film. And it creates this internal battle between selves. The movie makes it very clear, because sometimes Elizabeth is sort of lashing out in jealousy of this creation, if you will, but the unseen but heard voice, the man in black, if you will, who is perhaps running this laboratory responsible for the substance, says, "You're not two separate people. You're one and the same. Elizabeth is Sue, and Sue is Elizabeth." And it results in this almost Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde meets the fly. And I think that's a perfect way to summarize this film. You have this sort of inner conflict with this woman. At the same time, you have all the trappings and aesthetics of a body horror film that is just sort of stomach churning and sort of arresting at the same time, that you can't help but keep your eyes locked on the screen. It just grabs your attention from the very first frame and does not let you go for a minute. And if you try to look away, you'll be pulled right back to the screen, because something eye-popping happens in the next breath or frame. It's stomach-churning. And ultimately, the ending of Elizabeth / Sue using this substance results in horror beyond imagination. It's this hellish blob of a special effect that will leave your mouth on the freaking floor. Again, even though I have seen many body horror films, I'm not really a big fan of them. This one does it so well, and it's effective. And I think in part it's because the performances match the material. It matches the grandiose effect. So it's not just an effects heavy movie. There's actually performances and story that are worthy of all of these wild and stomach churning and eyeball popping moments that happen on the screen. The substance, of course, leaves little, or I should say, leaves much to the imagination in terms of what exactly is this fountain of eternal youth that Elizabeth is taking. And there's a few commercials sort of scattered throughout the film. There's a small prologue at the very beginning, and by prologue, it's really like 30 seconds, 90 seconds, sort of establishing what the substance does, which is produce a different but sort of same version of the original person. It's just sort of like a new and improved model, if you will. And that's all we need to know. We don't need a lot of exposition. We know what this substance is doing. We know what its purpose is. And then we're just along for the ride that Elizabeth and Sue both end up taking together. And again, as I said, putting aside all of the effects and the gross-out moments, the film really is a story about this character fighting back against aging, against sort of the natural ticking clock of life, and fighting sexism, her determination to stay relevant in the public eye. And in many ways, those horrors that happen, the sort of the showdown where she is fired from her job, a lot of that is frankly more gripping than just sort of the over-the-top effects that happen. Those are, again, almost window dressing. It's really more about this struggle that is happening for this woman who is fighting tooth and nail and using an option to try and reclaim her youth and vitality. And I mean, just Demi Moore is fantastic. She brings such pathos and terror to this character and creates this person in Elizabeth who only wishes to be seen and stay relevant no matter the cost. And pairing her opposite Margaret Qualley, who is another phenomenal talent in her own right. It's a match made in heaven. It's an absolute match made in heaven. And again, I mean, when you're going up against Demi Moore, a credible and accomplished actress, you've got to be ready to go, so to speak. And Margaret Qualley, she just nails it every single time. And again, it's wonderful to sort of watch her go through her own transformation and battle with determination to stay relevant and sort of the flaws of this substance that she's using. It's such an amazing film. It is one of those situations where it was a lot of hype that I heard surrounding the film. I thought, well, we'll see. Maybe it won't live up to the word of mouth. It exceeds everything. So if you have heard about the film, if you haven't seen it, I tell you to run, not walk, to your local theater, because it is still playing. You can get it on, I believe, a streaming platform or two. But this movie, it needs to be seen with an audience, I think, to really appreciate some of the spectacular moments, shall we say, that happen much and often throughout the film. But I loved it. I can't wait to watch it again. It is easily one of the best films of the year, engrossing as well as gross at the same time. It's just a magnificent marvel of a movie. But I encourage you to go see this film, and I hope you have the same reaction as I did. The movie is The Substance, starring Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. Go catch it if you can at a theater, because it is still playing and it is resonating with audiences and is even generating some Oscar buzz for next year. So again, to be determined, of course, but the film is that good. In fact, I think it's damn excellent. But the movie is The Substance, and I highly recommend it. All right, with that done for now, time to move on to the mailbag portion of today's show. Pulling out all the bells and whistles for this segment. Again, monthly mailbag. Send me your movie-related questions. You can email philwmovies@gmail.com or on Twitter at Phil at the movies. So there we go. Those are the two options. If you have some questions for next month, I'd be happy to take them and answer them on the show. One of the first ones that I got actually from email was, what movies or movie am I looking forward to the most in November? And I have to say, the movie that I am most excited for that I'm actually seeing this weekend is Heretic, and it's starring Hugh Grant. It's a horror film, so right up my alley, and I'll actually be covering it next week on the show. But that one definitely takes the top prize for me this month. Of course, Gladiator 2 later on, as well as Wicked and a few other films as well. But definitely Heretic, that one takes the prize for me. All right, moving on. So this next one was on Twitter, and it comes from Cookie, and she wants to know my favorite final boy in a horror film. Well, I like to keep things in the family. Laurie Strode is my favorite final girl, so that would mean that Dr. Loomis is my favorite final boy. Again, big fan, as you know, of the Halloween series. And while Dr. Loomis is not necessarily the typical stand-in for a final boy, I think his recurring presence in the Halloween series, particularly as the main rival and opponent to Michael Myers, makes him worthy of that title, to say nothing of the fact that you get the great performances by the late, great Donald Pleasance. So thank you for that question, Cookie. But yeah, very easy one for me, Dr. Loomis. Again, any chance I can talk about Halloween, it's a good thing. It's always Halloween here on this show, as far as I'm concerned. All right. Next one's a two-part question from Chris. This is also was on Twitter. When are you doing a review of Howard the Duck? Well, I will tell you right now, Chris, that'll be next year. Howard the Duck, that is such an interesting film. And, well, I'll just leave it at that. I'll leave it at that. So we'll have more to say in the near future, but I promise you next year. Second question from Chris. If you could only watch one genre of film for the rest of your life, what would it be? Again, keeping it very simple today, guys. It's horror. Horror is my favorite genre, bar none. There are so many layers and facets to the genre. You can have a comedic horror film. You can have a psychological horror film. You can have a satirical. You can have a slasher horror film. I love it. Again, you could have a film like Jaws, which, yes, I consider to be a horror film, to a film like The Blair Witch Project. It is such a wide-ranging genre, and it's always staying relevant. I'll say it right now. There was an article that I read last week, or maybe it was the week before, and I'm not even going to dignify it by sharing it in the show notes, because it's, I don't think it's worth even mentioning. But the writer essentially posits that horror fatigue is happening, and eventually the genre will wear itself out, a la superhero films, westerns, etc. And I'm here to call bull on that. Horror is everlasting. Horror is always reinventing. Horror is always fresh. There is no such thing as horror fatigue, because, fun fact, horror has been with cinema since the very beginning. And it's one of the few genres that always pops up. It never goes away. There may be peaks and valleys with particular subgenres like slashers, for example, or ghost stories or zombie films, but horror as a mainstay genre is part of cinema. And I think so long as people like being entertained, as they like being scared, I don't see the genre ever going away. Sorry for that little sidebar, but that question really set me off in the best possible way. But no, thank you, Chris, for that. Those two great questions. And yes, I promise, Howard the Duck is happening sooner rather than later. All right, next one, again from Twitter, comes from Emmett. Favorite one-liner in a movie, and again, really keeping things familiar with you guys today. I'm an open book, in some sense. The line from The Joker in The Dark Knight, "It's a funny world we live in." I always am using that line. I'm using memes and GIFs all the time. it's a line that it works in the context of the movie and the scene, but it has so much to say writ large in our real world. I feel I am always falling back on that line and just saying to any type of situation, it's a funny world we live in, and that is very true, more so than not. But thank you for that question, Emmett. All right, the next one, this is from Jay. What biopic would I like to see made, and who would I have as a cast and director? You know, that is such an interesting one because, you know, I did not know that I needed an Oppenheimer biopic in my life, but yet I got one. I'm almost hard pressed to say, like, if there's a singular figure necessarily. I tell you what I would like to see, and I think just because it would be a fascinating movie, there is a wonderful book written by the screenwriter Carl Gottlieb. It is called The Jaws Log, and it is an account of the filming and making of the movie Jaws during the spring, summer, and fall of 1974 on the island of Martha's Vineyard. And I think that would be a fascinating movie story to be translated into a movie. Frankly, again, this is really wishful thinking here, but if I had my way, if I could wave a magic wand, I think Steven Spielberg directing it, I would cast Gabriel LaBelle, of course, famous for both The Fabelmans, which was directed by Spielberg, and more recently for playing Lorne Michaels in the Saturday Night Live movie. I would cast LaBelle as a young Steven Spielberg. And again, I think just all of the dynamics that were at play with the making of that movie, I think could be really fascinating. And from the shark not working to the on-set antics and brawls between Richard Dreyfuss and Robert Shaw, I think it would be a legendary movie. And they've sort of done it a little bit with an off-Broadway play called The Shark Is Not Working. And so I think there's definitely an element to it, but I would take the Jaws log and I would adapt that into a movie. I think it would be really fascinating. And you could actually do it, you know, in a way as sort of a movie about a young Steven Spielberg. So that would be my pick if I could do, any sort of biopic, if you will, even though it's not necessarily a biopic in the tradition of the word. But I think a movie about the making of Jaws, that could be some legendary stuff. So thank you for that question, Jay. And the next one, this is a big one. This comes from Anthony, who's also on Twitter. And this one I really like. It's a little bit long, but I want to read it all just for the context. Do you think we, cinephiles on social media, let our own biases get in the way when it comes to predicting box office? Example, everybody was hyping The Fall Guy online, and it barely made a dent with the general audience. Another example, Barbie. No one online thought it would be a hit as huge as it did, despite early ticket sales and reviews. Third example, Gladiator 2. I know that the story has yet to be written, but social media seems to be excited, but advance sales have been nothing compared to Wicked, which is sandwiched between. I feel like, similar to politics, the collective we tend to find ourselves in bubbles on social media when it comes to films as well, and the disconnect between our prediction, which often seems to be based on personal preference, and reality, what will hit with the general audience, is widening even further as time passes. I feel the same could be said about how we make predictions when it comes to awards seasons. So a lot to unpack there. And again, thank you, Anthony, for the question. So yeah, I think we do. There is this tendency for people on social media, on Twitter, if you will, film Twitter, as it's often referred to sort of create your own narrative and sort of belief that, well, this movie is going to hit because we're all talking about it in our little circle. And sometimes it happens. Sometimes a movie connects. Sometimes a movie hits and it takes off like a rocket ship. But a lot of times, sort of when you expect a movie to be a hit, when you sort of are willing it to be a hit, it doesn't always. And so I think there is this tendency to sort of like immediately say, well, this film is going to be X. Again, the Gladiator 2 reference is perfect because this is now a sequel to a 20-plus-year-old film, which is a great film. It's a wonderful film. But the question is, will the audience be there for it? And I think with that one, there probably will be an audience for it because it is one of those movies that kind of cuts across demographics, if you will. It's definitely a big event-style movie. And I could see it resonating, particularly with older audiences and fans, of course, of the original. But again, all of that said, the point is well taken. A film like The Fall Guy, which I thoroughly enjoyed, but was definitely a product of online hype and interest that ultimately general audiences, when it came time to go see it in theaters, never bothered to show up. And I think sometimes it really is about us sort of in movie circles who sort of live and breathe this stuff to sort of step back and sort of look at, you know, the bigger picture. I promised I wasn't going to go down this the tangent again, but Joker 2 is another example of a film that prior to its release had a massive interest and attention made on online. But when you would talk to, you know, the average person, sort of outside of the film circles, they either knew and didn't care or were like, oh, I had no idea they were making them. So there is this, I think, disconnect between sort of what sort of, you know, movie circles, you know, think and sort of how general audiences perceive it. Again, a film like Terrifier 3, which I'm going to be talking about in a couple more weeks in time for Christmas. A film like that definitely has a strong presence, a following, if you will. But I mean, that is not a film that you would think just sort of on the surface, oh, you know, audiences aren't going to show up for a splatterfest horror film, but yet they did. And it's now the highest grossing unrated film ever. So, like, again, you just don't know. And I think sometimes when we make predictions, more often than not, those predictions end up being turned upside down. I'm of the mindset, don't make predictions. Don't wade into the speculation about, well, this movie, it's going to do $150 million in its opening weekend and it'll cross, you know, near $1 billion. That's all nonsense. Same thing with speculating about award season buzz, which again, I'll admit I'm guilty of that from time to time. I think ultimately you have to let these movies, any movie, play. You just take it for what it's worth. Don't try to put expectations on it beforehand because not all the time, but a lot of the time you will be let down. You know, you sort of build something up to the greatest thing since sliced bread, it ultimately falls down and cracks like an egg. So I'm of the belief that sometimes less social media is better because you can get into a groupthink mentality, and what sort of an online bubble thinks about a movie may not be the same way a general audience thinks. And ultimately, that's what it is all about. I know sometimes people get upset with that thinking, but with any film, whether it's a superhero film or a comedy or a drama or what have you, you have to think of the largest audience. You can't just be making something for a niche film group. You have to be thinking about the average person. And I think more often than not, you know, sort of if you're in a bubble, you think, well, everybody's going to think this certain way and love this movie and it will be wonderful and we'll all celebrate it. And again, sometimes it happens. Sometimes those things work out. Again, like Barbie, for example, but not all the time. Not all the time. And so I think it's more important to just sort of take a step back and just sort of appreciate the movie for itself. Let it rise or fall on its own merits, not sort of the pressures of social media and, well, it must be a hit because I'm willing it into existence. I don't think that's a healthy way to be dealing or working with art. Ultimately, art is about a visceral reaction. And when you sort of try to quantify it and put it in this like a numbers game, it's self-defeating. So I hope that answers that question, Anthony. That was a real good one. So thank you for that. And thank you to everybody who sent in your movie-related questions. This will, of course, be a monthly portion of the show. Again, you can send an email to philwmovies@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Twitter at @philatthemovies. So there we go. That takes care of that. More next month. And that brings me to the last portion of today's show. And again, thank you all for sticking with it. This has been a little bit of a longer one, coming in on 36 minutes, but promise won't always be me being this long-winded. But lastly, wanted to get to the special comment section of the show. This is just a few articles and news items that that popped up in my news feed last week, and I wanted to share some thoughts on them. Number one, the great director Quentin Tarantino is both praising Joker Folie à Deux and is also refusing to watch Dune and Dune Part 2, stating that he prefers the David Lynch version from the 1980s. Quentin Tarantino's been certainly coming out with a lot of interesting movie takes lately. Certainly, again, praising Joker Folie à Deux as this subversive masterpiece that is a giant middle finger to the audience and fans of the original film. And, you know, sort of saying that he doesn't need to see Dune and Dune Part 2 because he doesn't need remakes. And I'm paraphrasing there. And I just would say, you know what? Okay. You do you, Quentin. That's fine. And we'll carry on and have a good day. The next one, this was an interview that Jamie Lee Curtis was giving that came out actually on last Halloween, last Thursday. And when asked about whether or not she would return to the Halloween franchise, this, of course, after Halloween Ends, which was supposed to be the final send-off of Laurie Strode, and of course, you know, we know Michael will inevitably return to stalk Haddonfield once again. But Jamie Lee Curtis, that's supposed to be her last go around, her last stab at the pumpkin, so to speak. And interestingly enough, she was interviewed for Entertainment Weekly. And when asked the question of whether or not Laurie Strode would ever make a return, she said, never say never. And again, I'm paraphrasing here, but Jamie Lee Curtis, maybe not leaving the door open to possibly returning to the Halloween franchise. And I mean, look, I'm never going to say no to Jamie Lee Curtis coming back to the Halloween franchise. She certainly earned that right, and again, her performance and her character is legendary. That all being said, I do think for the sake of the series going forward, we have to move on beyond the Laurie Strode character. I think in order for the series to remain relevant and fresh, we can't be going down the rabbit hole of another Michael Laurie confrontation. And I say that whether it was Curtis returning or a recast, I think Laurie and Michael's storyline is done for the time being, if not forever. and it's time to carve a new pumpkin, so shall we say. So again, I think for the sake of renewal and rejuvenation, Halloween needs to find a new path forward. But again, very interesting to read that last Halloween. That was sort of a little surprise in my news feed on All Hallows Eve. But again, if I've learned anything when it comes to movies and franchises, never say never. Anything is possible. I mean, that of course goes all the way back to Sean Connery in many ways, with his infamous or famous return to the Bond character after swearing it off for a number of years. So again, anything is possible. And if I've learned anything lately, expect the unexpected. So those were just two items that I wanted to comment on. To reiterate, this will be the ending segment for the show each and every week. Just my thoughts or feelings on some particular movie-related news items that that cross my my eye, and I feel the urge or the passion to say a few extra words or possibly rant on any given movie-related subject. Finally, before I close, I wanted to just share with you some words that really stuck with me. And especially this week, I think it bears repeating because it is a universal message. And when you hear the words, I think you may sort of be taken a sort of aback as I am, because it does seem so obvious. But in this world in which we live, it's often easy to forget. And this was a wonderful reminder on this particular week, especially as we come out of the election season here in the United States. But I do think it is a universal message, and it bears repeating, and I wanted to share it with you today. In a world where you can be anything, be kind. It's really that simple, folks. It's really that simple. We're taught this as kids. We try to practice it as adults. We sometimes fall short. We forget. But kindness, it does go a long way. It goes a long way. In a world where you can be anything, be kind. It costs absolutely nothing, and it is so worthwhile. On that note, thank you for tuning in this week. I'll be back next week, and we'll do this all over again for the love of movies. All copyright material used or referenced in this show belong to the rightful owners and is made possible by the Fair Use Act. Thank you for listening to Phil at the Movies.